Hi, Anna.
Hi, Andrew.
And hey, everybody else.
And welcome to our podcast,
Scary Stories to Tell in the Pod.
It's a podcast about spooky things, scary things, things you tell us about. I have COVID.
She sure does. Not to break HIPAA.
This podcast is governed by HIPAA because it is technically a nurse practitioner. I have COVID for the second time in 8 weeks, which honestly, I was going to blame not being able to describe what the podcast was on that. But I always have a hard time summarizing things. So maybe it's not a side effect.
I tell you, you know, we take a nice little spring break. We take a break from y'all. And now we're back. We're ready. We're sick as hell. And we are going to take it anymore.
We are going to take it anymore.
Because
there's 13 of you out there who need this.
And you know what? We care about that.
We
care about that.
I care about that. I really do.
Much like Rosamund Pike, I care a lot. And so does Anna.
Yeah, we both have really sharp bobs. Oh, what a movie. We were making movies for a while like that. Remember?
We were really making movies like that about unsympathetic people.
Where it was like, what is this saying? And the movie was like, nothing. And you're like, got it.
Okay. Yeah. It heavily features a nude Peter Dinklage, which, you know, is for some demographics. And I think that's great.
I have no memory of that. Mm. Were we okay?
No. And I'm still not sure that I am.
No.
Anna, other than having COVID for the second time in 8 weeks, did anything spooky happen to you in this time we had off?
The time we had off, God, I'm thinking, did anything spooky happen to you?
I feel like I've got kind of a backlog of spooky things.
Why don't you cover for both of us?
Okay. One of the spooky things that happened is, Chris and my strength trainer was like, before you work out, like have some chia seed pudding in the morning, or like oatmeal with chia seed in it in the morning. And I was like, great. So I am now the sort of person who buys chia seed. I made overnight oats with it. Mm. And that night, Chris did not wake me up, but he was in a panic because I did not tell Chris that I had made overnight oats with chia seeds. And he discovered two little blobs in his hair. And he was convinced that a bug had laid eggs in his hair. And he went on Reddit and he posted a picture of the two chia seeds. And he was like, just found these little slimy blobs in my hair. What laid eggs? And immediately someone was like, those are chia seeds. So that was a spooky thing that happened to Chris. But
that
I think that counts.
The most goddamn Chris and Andrew sitcom moment. That's unreal.
It really did feel that way.
His life has been made so much better by Reddit. We can all agree.
One of the few who has a really healthy relationship to it.
I'm so glad nothing laid eggs in his hair.
Me too. And I think he was too. And when he showed me the picture of, because I think what had maybe happened is two little chia seeds were maybe on the counter and he maybe put his hand on the counter and then he put his hand through his hair. And then I don't know whether he showered or somehow they hydrated. And the picture really does look like some godforsaken bug egg.
Oh, boy. I'm turning off my video because you just slowed down a little bit.
Okay.
We're back to the good old days of recording over the computer.
I know. And boy, now that Zencaster costs money, I mean, what a paradigm shift.
Who gave her the right?
Who gave her the right to decide over there at Miss Zencaster?
Hi, Miss Zencaster. Hi.
Remember us?
Remember?
From the pandemic?
Remember when you were for no one and now you're for everyone? I'm so glad. That's reminding me of when we thought there were mosquitoes laying eggs in our dorm bathroom, but it was just the beads from somebody's face wash.
Oh, that is also, yeah, these things can happen. Any little bits or blobs really have us on edge about bugs.
It's instinctual. We're always ready to find out that our disgusting habits have led us to having bugs in our hair.
Anna,
Yeah.
I also have another spooky thing to tell you about.
Thank you.
Because since we last recorded, Chris and I spent a week in Sydney, Australia.
That's right.
Which was really, really wonderful. Beautiful city, very friendly people. We got to visit our good friends and frequent guest on the pod, Spencer Novick, who's doing a really wonderful show in Sydney. Everything about Sydney is perfect and gorgeous. The one thing is, at dusk in this major city, instead of like there being birds that fly around every evening when the sun sets, the skies are filled with giant flying foxes, which in layman term is big bat. That's a big bat.
That's a big bat.
And they're out there. They eat fruit, which is fine. But it is very surreal to see them flying around. And they're kind of out there. It doesn't seem like they fly for a living. It all feels very new to
them. Their first time every time.
Yeah. Every time they land on something, it is kind of like, like it's me getting in and out of a theme park ride.
It's me making a left turn that's not protected by a turn signal. Wait, so can you, I saw Chris and he held his arms out and said 3 feet wide about the wings.
Yeah.
Could you just like body wise, what are we looking at? Is that seagull? Is it bigger than seagull?
I'm going to say it's if Ladybird went parasailing.
I think that's huge.
Yeah, it's big. It's big. It's
a loaf of bread.
Yes. A loaf of bread. Like a my size Barbie length. That's the wingspan.
Yeah.
Think of the height of a my size Barbie, and I know all can imagine it.
Famously 3 feet long.
Yes. And that's the wingspan we're talking about. And our friend Spencer said, he was like, yeah, they're completely harmless, but if one poops on you, you gotta go to the hospital.
They're totally harmless unless they touch you, and then you could die.
I know. And the thing is, they were everywhere. And I was like, I'm going to get pooped on. I felt it in my bones. It's kind of miraculous it didn't happen.
You're just one of those guys.
I'm just one of those guys. And now it's kind of at a point where, because it didn't happen there, I feel like it's going to happen unexpectedly somewhere else.
You're going to open your DOP kit and one's going to fly out.
That is my fear.
Do they make sound? I'm sorry. I have one last question.
Please.
It's not really in the flow of, it was naturally wrapping up and you were right to start to pivot. I do have a question, which is, do they make sound?
I'm sure they do. I did not hear the sound. The sound I associate with them is like branches rustling very loudly.
Oh, scary.
Yeah, that's it. You know what it is? Every time they land, it sounds like someone has kicked a kickball into a bush. And that's loud.
That's a lot of movement. I have such a deep understanding of that sound, Andrew.
Yeah.
Wow. You get it. You know. You know.
Thank you very much.
You're the voice of a generation. Thank you.
I very much appreciate that. And I know we had a brief bat conversation in a previous episode about the world's unluckiest people, but I decided to let that Sydney experience inspire me for today's episode.
Oh.
And I deliberated. There was a part of me that kind of wanted to do Mirror World, but I have another idea for that further down the line.
Okay.
We're going to be returning to one of my favorite genres of episode, which is Icons of Whores.
Icons of Whores.
And this one's about bats.
Andrew, I think this is great.
Thank you very much. I kind of wanted to focus on the folklore of bats. And we'll get into a bit of the science of them, but this is not a science podcast, contrary to the PhDs that Anna and I have.
Yep.
And I'm gonna first be drawing from a Refinery29 article written by Erica W. Smith, And this article came out around Halloween, and the title of it is "What Do Bats Have to Do with Halloween Anyway?" I know it's not Halloween, but we're just riding with it by this point. You all know spooky is not seasonal.
I'd venture to say that late March is the Halloweenest time that isn't Halloween.
That is it. I know I've probably talked about this before, but in third grade when I was in Catholic school, I threw a haunted house at our house for my class to come to in mid-March. And my bad brain behavior was like, well, if there's Christmas in July, we're having Halloween in March.
Why not?
Which I found more charming than any of the adults who I said that line to.
you were wasted on them.
I was really, they had it with my bullshit. So I'm just going to start off and say that experts note that nocturnal animals are often associated with death and darkness. They engage in mysterious activities in the dark, and so they have been cloaked in superstition since ancient times, says Stanford University classic scholar Adrian Mayer, and this is from a National Geographic interview. And bats are particularly spooky. The combination of dark gray, brown, or black shades with cryptic nighttime habits evoked a sense of awe and fear back in the time when the only lights at night were oil lamps and wax candles. Bats' nocturnal nature, combined with the fact that they often live in caves, gave them a historic association with the underworld and death, according to the Library of Congress. Folklorist Frank C. Brown documented that in the early 20th century, many Americans associated bats with death or bad luck, and the fallen angel Ariel was often depicted as riding on a bat as far back as Shakespeare's time. I have a question. A fallen angel Ariel?
Ariel from The Tempest is the scary kind of guy.
I never put together that Ariel was supposed to be a fallen angel.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, we're learning something new every day.
That's what you get for doing Spark Notes.
And you know what? Things. And you know what? I use Spark Notes a lot. I was keeping them in business over there for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Anna, this is weird. Bats are the only flying mammal. Isn't that crazy?
God, that immediately made me want to challenge it. Like, yeah, what about seagulls, cars,
Pegasuses,
trees?
Yeah.
No, they really are.
Yeah, we got some gliders, but not flyers.
Mm.
Many cultures consider bats a liminal animal, not quite a bird, not quite a mammal. Something else liminal? Halloween. One of the main themes of Halloween is liminality, the in-betweenness. Mm. It's between one state and another state, between growth and death, between fall and winter, the beginning of the new year. There are all sorts of symbols that of that in-betweenness. Stephen Saporin, a history professor and folklorist at Utah State University, told Popular Science. Also, according to the Library of Congress, it's not clear when bats became associated with vampires, but examples appear in vampire fiction of the late 1700s and 1800s. In the best-known example of this genre, Bram Stoker's 1897 novel Dracula.
Woo! yeah! Entrance applause.
I thought it well to know, if possible, where the Count would go when he left the house. I did not see him, but I saw a bat rise from Renfield's window and flap westward, the character Quincy Morris recounts. Quincy Morris, I do think, is amongst the hottest characters in the Dracula novel.
Really?
Yeah. He's like the American cowboy.
I haven't read Dracula.
Anna, I gotta tell you, Dracula is the horniest novel written in English. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, yeah? Oh, that's great. I'm gonna rent it on my Kindle.
It's a great Kindle book. It's a great Kindle book.
What was his name again? Sorry, Morris.
Quincy Morris.
Quincy Morris. It's always the guys with weird names that are hotter than you expect them to be.
Yeah, and Quincy, you if your name is Quincy and you're not hot, it's over for you.
It's done.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, keep going.
No, please. The one other thing I'll say about Dracula being a horny novel is there are questions about Bram Stoker's sexuality. He, in later years, was very homophobic, which sometimes can be indicative of something, but also that can be a harmful trope, that homophobic people are closeted. But I will say that reading it as a gay guy, something horny is happening, because the whole book is about a bunch of attractive men from different places. who are in love with one woman who says no to them getting married. And then all the men she says no to are like, well, that's okay. Instead, we'll just be each other's best friends. And that feels canonically queer to me.
That, yeah, being friends as an adult is queer.
Yeah, I know. Straight men have no friends.
It's not. Yeah.
Okay. Back into the research, Anna. Mm. Others say that bats have been associated with Halloween for hundreds of years thanks to Samhain, a Celtic harvest festival. Celebrations involve lighting bonfires, which attract bugs, which in turn attract bug-munching bats.
Bug-munching bats.
That sounds like an insult.
I liked it.
You bug-munching bat.
I'm reclaiming it.
I'm reclaiming my bats? In a slightly different theory, Nate Fuller, a graduate student in Boston University's bat biology program, told Quartz that when Irish and Scottish immigrants came to the United States, they began to associate bats with Samhain simply because of the timing. Some species of bats will hibernate or fly south for the winter, so in the northern U.S., you can see them swarming in October and November.
Mm.
Which, Anna, I mean, this has been widely documented on the pod, but my childhood home in New Hampshire, we had an attic full of bats, hundreds of bats, yeah, that we could not legally remove because they were a protected species. And every Halloween, that would be when they would migrate. And they'd come soaring out of the chimney into the air. And we really looked like a high-quality Halloween house.
You had no chance of being anything other than a Halloween fan.
I mean, I would have been a much unhappier person if I hadn't embraced it. This is my favorite part of this particular article, Anna. Some experts believe that bats are associated with Halloween because they are just weird. People fear what we don't understand, and with bats nocturnal and tending to be small, they're cryptic, Joy O'Keefe, director of the Indiana State University Bat Center, told Popular Science. Even us bat biologists don't know a heck of a lot about them. It only takes a few wrong turns to perpetuate myths and fears about bats. But, although they might be creepy, bats are also helpful to the environment. They eat bugs, so many that, according to the National Wildlife Foundation, they save us between $3.7 and $54 billion in pest control services every year. What?
Wow.
Thanks, bats. They also help pollinate over 700 plants, including many we love to eat, such as avocados, bananas, peaches, and mangoes.
Nice. So,
when you put up bat-shaped wall stickers before your Halloween party, remember that they help us humans, even if they freak us out. That's nice.
That's beautiful. And actually, I like the part that made you examine your opinions and behavior at the end there.
So this is some more information from a website called Owlcation, like an owl's vacation, I think is the implication.
Okay.
And this is an article by Rupert Taylor. And there were some little things that I appreciated here. Like according to a Cherokee fable, eagles fashioned bats out of the skin of a groundhog to help them win a game they were playing with a deer, a bear, and a terrapin. Other North American Indian tribes have variations of this theme describing how bats came to be. In Fiji, however, they tell the story of how a rat stole the wings of a heron to become a bat. Samoans have a similar fable. In southwestern India, the creation myth has the bat emerging from an unhappy bird that prayed to be human. Something went so wrong that while bats got hair, teeth, and other mammalian features, they remained mostly birds. This one's really wild, Anna. Ancient Romans created a myth in which there was a battle between birds and mammals. The bats wisely stayed out of the conflict and only picked a side when the god Mars declared the birds the winner. The opportunistic bats then decided to support the birds.
Pieces of shit.
Bats. Andrew,
of those myths, which one sounds right to you?
I really am compelled by the bird who wished to be a human.
I was going to say the exact same thing. That sounds right. They have little human face. Their little eyes are very human.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. And I feel like they make a lot of expressions. Like, have you ever seen the TikToks of the bat eating a banana?
Like the flying fox or regular bat? Yeah, for sure. Absolutely.
Really love that. Oh, a variation of this story is told in parts of Africa where bats switch their allegiances according to which side appears to be winning. And when the fight is over, both sides remember the actions of the duplicitous bats and reject them.
Oh.
Devastating.
Duplicitous bats.
Duplicitous bats. Perhaps the perfidy of the bats in this fable have carried over into the perception of the critters in folklore as familiars of witches. Shakespeare has the sorceresses huddled around their cauldron mixing evil potions in Macbeth. Into their vile broth goes eye of newt and toe of frog, wool of bat and tongue of dog. I was really always, I had a shudder when I considered the wool of a bat, because that means you shaved a bat.
Yeah, it reminds you bats have wool. They have hair. It makes you think about their little bellies.
I know, their little furry bellies. Or sometimes they have little tufts of hair on top of their head.
Sure.
Yeah. In an age wherein superstition guided the lives of most people, the notion that witches used bats, known as witches' birds, I don't know that I've ever heard them called witches' birds.
No, but I think we should go with that.
Yeah. To carry messages to and from the devil. In Bayonne, France, a woman referred to as Lady Jacquemet is said to have had crowds of bats flying around her house and garden. This was taken as a clear sign that she was dealing with dark forces, so she was burned at the stake. Oh, boy.
Oh, my God, Andrew, that would have been your family.
I know. It wasn't our fault. We just didn't want to kill all the bats. And then I love this section here. This is called Bat Omens. There is a strong association between bats and death. In the past, people have believed that if a bat got into your house, it was a sign someone was about to die. A bat arriving on Halloween meant your house was haunted. A bat tangled in a person's hair indicates that they are destined for eternal damnation.
Oh, no, that lady.
I know. She had, that was hours that she had the bat in her hair.
I think she knew she was destined for eternal damnation based on everything else.
She gave into it. She's here for a good time, not a long time. A French twist is that a bat in the hair means a disastrous love affair is in the offing.
And, wait, sorry, what was the sign of the disastrous love affair?
That the French believe that if a bat got stuck in your hair, it meant that you were a failed relationship.
Wow.
Pliny the Elder, a philosopher of ancient Rome, knew how to deal with these misfortunes. First, catch a bat and carry it alive around your house 3 times, then release it. Mm. Now, Pliny, how many times you got rabies, buddy?
This just sounds like someone who doesn't cook making up a recipe. It's like,
I know.
I don't think you've ever done that.
Oh, when you see people like this, these Rice Krispie squares don't have butter. It's like, I don't believe you for a hot second.
Oh, my God. Yeah. A lot of those people, this quick side note, there's some TikTok person who made a really gross looking thing like that. Oh, it was that she made her own like panko breadcrumbs or her own like rice paper.
Oh, boy.
Or rice cracker. It was something that, oh, no, it was. She made her own garlic powder out of garlic, the like husks of a clove of garlic.
Oh, sure.
She soaked it and then dried it and baked it and then pounded it with a mortar and pestle and then posted it and smiled. And a bunch of the comments were like, I made this and it tasted like nothing. And she said, I know. Yeah, I definitely noticed that it just didn't really have much of a taste. I was like, that's at least good that she was like, yeah, no, it was nothing.
Ma'am. I love it. There's an America's Test Kitchen recipe for garlic bread. And in the video, they explain the science behind garlic contains a chemical compound called allicin. Mm-hmm. And there's just a clip where it's quiet for a long time. This is not played for laughs at all. But they're like, if you put the garlic in the microwave with some butter, it will reduce the strength of the allicin, which has like a bitter acerbic taste. Mm-hmm. But he comes back from the microwave and he's like, okay, we've microwaved the butter, we've killed allicin, and now we're ready to. It's just like, what a confession. Minced a garlic bread recipe.
Just covered in blood.
Yeah. And we got to talk about vampire bats, Anna.
Of people are waiting for it.
So there are 1,200 species of bats that are vampire bats. But their reputation for harm vastly outweighs their numbers, as only three of these species actually feed on blood. These vampire bats live in Central and South America, and their favored menu items are birds and livestock. However, they will snack on porcupines and armadillos and take a taste of human blood if people sleep outside. I mean, the other thing about rabies is, and I've been finding a lot of different information on this. The thing is, like, if you find a bat in your cabin, or like if a bat's been around and you're not sure if you got bit or not, that you should go to the hospital and get a rabies shot. Mm. I'm not going to say don't do that because I'm not a medical professional. But there are many other animals who are much more likely to have rabies. It's just a matter of if you get scratched or bitten by a bat, sometimes you'll have no idea.
Right. Oh, so that's interesting. I didn't realize that.
Right. Yeah. So I think that might be the big function of that. I mean, certainly there are bats that do have rabies. They're just not like the primary carrier of rabies.
It's that their little nails and their little teeth are so little.
Little. So here I got some more bat facts, Anna, if you don't mind.
Lay it on.
It's likely you've heard the expression blind as a bat. Turns out it has no basis in fact. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, bats have small eyes with very sensitive vision, which help them see in conditions we might consider pitch black. They don't have the sharp and colorful vision humans have, but they don't need that. So, you know, let's update the euphemisms, everybody.
Canceled. All of you canceled. Done.
Yeah. Ableism and bat phobia in one go.
It's a bad look.
It's a bad look. Oh, this I liked. The bumblebee bat is the world's smallest mammal, weighing just 2 grams.
Are you kidding? I feel like I hear about a different world's smallest mammal every day. Bumblebee bat.
Anna, 2 grams. That's less than the weight of a 1 cent coin.
This thing looked like a little bug. Oh, it's hugging a finger. Come on.
Oh, now come on now.
Wow, that is small. All right.
Oh my God, Anna, this next factoid. British ornithologist, the Earl of Cranbrook, debunked the myth that bats get tangled up in the hair of women. In 1959, he recruited 3 female volunteers.
No.
Using 4 different species of bat, the Earl tried to get them enmeshed in the women's coiffure. The bats all declined to get snagged.
What were these women provided for their time? Because it wasn't money.
It definitely wasn't. A hat box?
Hat box with a bat in it. Oh, just kidding.
My grandmother on my dad's side was a little Irish lady from Brooklyn, or Irish American lady, I should say, from Brooklyn. And one time she was like, do you have a, she like was looking for a storage, something to put, like use for storage. And she said, like, do you have a hat box? And I thought that was the funniest thing I'd ever heard. The idea of having a hat box on hand over a cardboard box, a shoe box.
No, she's buying more hats than shoes.
Oh, yeah. And then just in terms of the folklore of bats, I loved hearing about like bats around the world and the ideas of them. In Tanzanian myth, a wing bat like evil entity known as Papabua was said to assault people during the night, attacking them and violently sodomizing them. What?
Oh, Papabua?
I think so. If we have any Tanzanian listeners and that we're getting that pronunciation wrong, which I'm sure we are, let us know. In 1995, this was the focus of a major outbreak of mass hysteria or panic, which spread from Pemba to Unguja, the main island of the Zanzibar archipelago, and across to Dar es Salaam and other urban centers of the East African coast. What?
Wait, what year did this happen?
1995.
That's recent.
Yeah.
Do you think that was like a AIDS era panic thing?
Oh, that, I mean, I guess that would make sense because this is both, we're talking about sodomy and then bats, which culturally we understand is kind of dealing in blood. That is crazy. I mean, I'm guessing.
Should we go to grad school and maybe write about it?
That sounds
good. Feels like a good reason to go to grad school.
Also, this is coming from villainswiki.com, so I'm not sure. I'm not quite sure how much we can hang our hat on it.
Sure.
In Aztec mythology, bats symbolized the land of the dead, destruction, and decay, and were considered dark spirits. An East Nigerian myth tells the story of the bat and the bush rat, in which the bat murdered the bush rat and now only comes out at night to avoid being caught and punished. Wow. Fuck. That's pretty wild. Bats as murderers.
Punished. You can't punish a bat. Yeah.
I guess, I mean, here's the thing about bats. I feel like maybe no other animal runs the gamut from frightening to cute. You know?
Yeah, like, I'd say it's mostly frightening. And then flying foxes, like you saw in Sydney, are very cute.
Yeah. They've got such kind of big, dopey eyes.
Yeah, and they're always hanging onto a finger, like, huh? Like, they always look like they're wet.
They do always look like that, yeah. I don't like thinking about how their wings are a hand.
Oh, fuck you for reminding me of that. Honestly, Andrew, that was shitty. That was really shitty. Why would you make me remember that the wing is a hand?
Does it make you feel better to think instead about how dog feet, like, isn't it that it's like dogs are always kind of walking on their tiptoes?
Yeah, fine. That's okay. Not as bad as wing is hand. God, Dan, now you're making me think about how whale flipper is hand.
Oh, I don't like that at all. Have you seen the viral clip of, like, here's where whales came from? And I don't like any of it until they're whales, I'll be honest.
Oh, yeah, I guess I understand why people would be creationist, because it's just gross to look at that stuff.
It's too much to think about.
A whale with feet? Fuck off.
I will say, yesterday, Chris and friend of the pod, Katie Fischel, and I went to go see the new Godzilla King Kong movie, also Billy Domino. And I was watching that movie kind of like how I imagine creationists think about evolution.
Oh, yeah.
Where I was like, I mean, I'm having a blast, but this makes no sense, you know?
That didn't happen.
And you know, spoiler alert, if you don't want to hear anything about this, please turn it off. But spoiler incoming, Mothra comes back to life, which I did tell you about, Anna.
Unreal. She come back from dust.
She's brought back to life by a little girl. And I think the biggest question I left with is, there is a part in the movie where Godzilla is about to kill King Kong over a really complex misunderstanding. And Mothra flies in, intervenes. Godzilla looks at her like, what are you doing? I got to kill this giant gorilla. Mothra, like, makes purposeful moth sounds for, I would say, 12 seconds. And Godzilla is, like, nodding along, like, okay. And it becomes clear that Mothra is explaining the misunderstanding to Godzilla.
Oh.
And how I know that this is the case is that afterwards, Godzilla is pretty much like, okay, and he changes his mind, and then he and King Kong work together. So my question is, was there, like, at that point, do you just give up entirely on, like, how moths communicate, or like the moth sounds? Like, is it really just like we're leaning into the full wildness of Mothra being like, oh no, here's the deal. He's not fighting you. There's another bad gorilla that the two of you need to beat.
God, I wonder. I'm sure there's a DVD special feature that will talk about how they talked to moth experts and then ignored them to make it what they wanted.
Billy just updated us that he has a friend who works in post, who had to watch that Godzilla Kong movie 20 times, for some specific reason. And I just wonder what would happen to me if I watched it 20 times. I'll say I had a blast. I had a great time watching it.
No, but I don't like watching something twice.
I don't know
twice.
That I could do it 20 times.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Anyway, Anna, I thank you for letting me go down this deep dive into bats and bat culture.
Andrew, thank you for telling us about bat culture. What I take away from today is I didn't realize that bats were in so many places. They really are everywhere.
They really are everywhere. And they're in cold places, too, which I really didn't take into consideration.
That blew my hair back. I could not believe it.
Yeah, wig snatched off.
It's off.
I guess, and listen, we have so many wonderful listeners in so many different fields. Water treatment, that's it, I think.
That's the only job. That's the only job.
But if anyone out there is a bat specialist or has any insight, maybe even someone who specializes in fertilizer or plant care, let us know. We'd love to hear some more bat facts.
Come on.
Come on now. Anna, anything else? Anything else to close us out on?
No, I have to go lay down.
Oh, feel better.
I will. I get 2 hours of walking around a day.
I think that's nice.
Yeah.
And everybody else, get out.